The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from The Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and it's Saturday, so we are heading into the vault for an older episode of the show. This one was originally published on September 29th, 2022, but it was part of our Halloween offerings for last year. This was part one of our series on Elf Shot.
That's right. I mean, if you're not sure what this is about, well, I mean, does it get any spookier than strange, unseen, unknowable beings in the woods just firing off strange missiles that may well be invisible? And when they lodge themselves in the bodies of your livestock, or even worse, your body, they bring about, untold destruction.
Beware of the fairy weapons.
It was my fault for letting the cattle graze so near the old wood and the circular stones, where the roots grow elf-twisted and rainwater fills elf cups in the rock, where strange lights dance some nights and the moonlight shines brighter than elsewhere. I'd lost cows before, but never like this. I found her bloated and dead by the tree line. As I strolled up to the poor heifer, I saw neither bite nor puncture on her hide. I scanned the surrounding grass for signs of tracks or blood. I saw neither, but that's when something caught my eye. A small stone point like an arrowhead with neither shaft nor fletchings, and carved by some art not practiced by mortal men. I stooped to pick it up, and that's when I felt a white-hot pain in my upper left side. I felt for blood underneath my shirt, such was the pain, but found only unpierced flesh, even as the agony of it brought me to my knees in the tall grass. I scanned the tree line. They were invisible to my eyes, but I felt them somehow. The elves watching on from the shadows of the wood, perhaps snickering in their sublime, odd tongue as the elf bolt racked my body. But I clutched the stone in my hand. I knew what I had to do. I dragged myself back across the field, sweat pouring down my face and my spleen swelling fit to burst with elf cake. Even then, when I arrived back at the house, I dropped the little elf stone in a pan of water. I clutched my Bible for good measure. I strained to remember words and incantations by either priest or wise woman, but the best I could manage was a vague prayer to be interpreted by whatever heard me in my moment of need. I drank the stone-touched water down, all of it, though it chilled my teeth and stung my tongue, and then I realized too late that the charm was no good, for it had touched the ground. Sunlight had fallen upon it. The power of the elves had all but drained from the thing, and I was afforded only passing relief. And so I write this letter by candlelight, and I will weigh it down on the table with the queer stone as proof, for I am now elf-marked and elf-taken. I swell, I ache, the moon rises once more, and the sound of their music fills the night.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio. welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
And that little cold open definitely takes some liberties with the folklore we're going to be discussing here today. We're trying to get a little seasonal Halloween flavor here going in this episode, which I guess is kind of kickstarting our Halloween season here on Stuff to Blow Your Mind. But today we're going to be talking about, as you might guess from the opening, elf shot or elf stones, pixie arrows, elf arrows, and many other names.
The missiles of the others.
Yeah. So the basic idea here, I think, is basically embedded in the fiction we just shared here. The idea that, and this is just roughly so, like with many folk traditions, as we'll discuss, there are a number of variations over time and space. But the idea here is that the elves, out of trickery or pure malice, they might shoot cattle or humans, in some cases, with their invisible arrows. And these invisible arrows leave little or no physical trace, in many tellings, but cause otherwise unexplainable pain or disease, or perhaps even death. The notion was supported via the evidence of discovered Neolithic arrowheads and other curios. And the idea is especially tied to the British Isles, but one sees examples of it from elsewhere in Europe, as well as from the Americas after colonial arrival.
Right, so the belief in elf shot, I think, is best understood not as a single belief, but as a sort of complex of related explanations for totally different types of natural phenomena that are all sort of unified under a common theory of fairy weapons and fairy malice.
Yeah. And without diving any deeper, we can see the appeal of these ideas, right? It's a superstitious, supernatural script that can help explain several different things, help explain an otherwise unexplained illness, otherwise unexplained pain or another malady, otherwise unexplained illness or death in cattle, and otherwise unexplained artifacts found on or in the earth. Now, it makes sense, I think, at this point to discuss the elves a bit, because I know for many of us out there, you say the word elf, and there are probably a few different key images and ideas that are going to immediately come to life in your mind. I mean, especially now with the Rings of Power on TV and so forth, the resurgence of Dungeons and Dragons, people are going to think about the fantasy elves of Tolkien and Tolkien-derived works like Dungeons and Dragons. For others of you out there, you might instantly think about Santa's elves or Keebler elves, little curious people making novelties in imaginary, idealistic workshops.
Right. I would say that the influence of Tolkien is so strong that, at least in America, I don't know if this would be as true in the rest of the English-speaking world even, but at least in America, when you say elf, I think what people mostly think is a Tolkien-style high elf, an Elrond or Galadriel-type figure, a kind of noble and elegant fantasy aristocrat who has, you know, wisdom and magic arts to offer.
Yeah, and generally just super blonde hair, real, real pristine blonde wig going on in many cases. Though I guess Elrond didn't have blonde hair.
Did Elrond have red hair? I don't know.
Dark hair? I don't know. There's an Elrond, the younger version of Elrond is in the Rings of Power, and I'm suddenly at a loss to remember what color his hair is. Mainly remember the ears.
Yeah, I remember thinking around the year 2002 or so. It's like Liv Tyler. That's an elf.
Now, I guess the interesting thing is that, of course, both of these ideas, obviously Tolkien's ideas of elves have their roots in actual folklore and mythology, as one would expect. But even like Santa's elves and Keebler elves, I guess they're not completely removed from the mythological roots here, but perhaps less connected.
Yeah, as you're saying, once you get outside of the very sort of narrowly Tolkien-influenced idea, the elf is actually an extremely broad tradition.
Right. And you get into many of these traditions and beliefs of old, and elves get more mysterious and also more dangerous. They become less human and harder to fathom. So two of the sources I often turn to when thinking about these things are Brewer's Dictionary of Phrase and Fable, which is a pretty good book even today for highlighting some of this stuff. And then of course I always look at the books of folklorist Carol Rose, in particular for this one, Spirits, Fairies, Leprechauns, and Goblins, which is still very much in print. I always recommend that one to fans of mythological and folkloric beings. But in Brewer's Dictionary of Phrase and Fable, the definition of elf is, quote, a dwarfish being of Teutonic mythology possessed of magical powers, which is used for the good or ill of mankind. Carol Rose in Spirits, Fairies, Leprechauns, and Goblins mentions that in Teutonic mythology, the Alfar are subdivided into dark elves and light elves. And Rose refers to them as well as a type of sprite found in British, Icelandic, Scandinavian, and Teutonic legend. They are the Alf. There are several different spellings that are kind of like elf or alf or ylf, or in some cases you have like the Ellen or Elfolk in Danish. You have the Elvor in Swedish traditions. And then there are the Speywives in Icelandic traditions and many more. Now, there have been attempts to understand elves as both sort of folkloric and mythological reverberations of our understandings of indigenous peoples, which certainly ties in with some of the themes we'll be exploring here, as well as with people born with certain birth defects or people that have certain illnesses. And these are perhaps broader explorations, but I think we can see the validity of both avenues, combined, of course, as always, with the self-sustaining power of myth, folklore, and belief. As we often mention on the show, we can't discount the power of human imagination and creativity, be that, imagination acting out of pure whimsy or imagination seeking to understand things or just even make shape of various realities of life.
Yeah. And another way I would put that is that, yes, people often did probably see something they didn't understand and then try to put together a mythical theory of it, a kind of supernatural explanation that would make sense of it. But then other times, clearly, people just make things up. I mean, people have imagination and they dream things up. So you get both in our mythical traditions, I think. And it's limiting to assume that you're always looking at one thing or the other.
Right, right. But once the script is established, the script is generally nourished and maintained. So like other similar beings in folklore, such as, say, the Irish tradition of the Tuatha De Danann, fairies, and so forth, there's kind of a ghost species aura to the elves. They're the sublime other that occupies places that we cannot occupy. They hold powers that we scarcely comprehend, and they may wish us well, they may wish us ill, or they may just sort of be neutral in all matters. And their reasons are hard to fathom. They might do the things they do on a whim, or they might have seemingly good reason to act against us or for us. They're also associated with a host of unexplained phenomena, including visual phenomena, making them a core supernatural script for the unexplained that I think aligns, and many have pointed this out, align closely with 20th and 21st century uses of the UFO script, of the alien visitor script for the unexplained as a way of shaping and processing things that we don't understand. For example, as pointed out by both in both Rose's book and in Brewer's, we have a number of elf-related phenomena in folk traditions, and they include the following. There's elf boar, which is apparent. This is apparently a piece of wood from which the knot has been dropped out. I don't know how much I really need a supernatural script to explain that, but fair enough. There's elf cake. This is an enlargement of the spleen.
Ooh.
Elf child, this is a changeling, getting into changeling traditions. This one was new to me, an elf cup. Elf cup, this would be where you have stone that has a hollow formed from dripping water and water collects there. Well, that's the elf cup, and I guess the elves drink from it.
Mm-hmm.
Elf fire, getting into traditions of the will-o'-the-wisp, which we've covered on the show before. Now, here's one that people with longer hair or with children with longer hair can definitely comment on, elf locks. These are tangles and knots in the hair caused by elves in the night. If one is elf marked, that may refer to birth defects or birthmarks caused by the elves. If you are elf taken, that means you're a bewitched or enchanted person. Elf Twisted may refer to someone who has suffered a stroke, but it also can refer to deformed vegetation, elf twisted vegetation. And then this is an interesting one I ran across as well. I don't think this was in either of these texts, but elf milling, the sound of woodworms chewing.
Mm.
And then, of course, we have our elf arrows, our elf shot, which, again, is a perfect script to turn to in an attempt to explain the unexplainable. And also, as alluded to in the cold open, the artifacts associated with elf shot, the little found stones and arrowheads, are also associated with various folk medicine and magical practices, generally thought to heal or alleviate illness in animals or humans, generally illnesses caused or perceived to be caused by the elf shot. Like if you get shot by a fantasy arrow, by a magical arrow from from the elves, well, if you can find that that artifact, well, then maybe we have a chance of curing things. Or if we happen to have any in the collection of the local healer, maybe a little satchel of elf stones somewhere, well, those can be used in the curative arts.
Drawing on the traditional logic of like cures like, or sympathetic magic, the idea that if your ailment is caused by a certain type of object or action, then it can also be maybe cured by a similar or related type of object or action.
Right, right. And sometimes these stones, these elf arrows and so forth, they're thought to be essentially the ones that were fired. Other times, they may have been dropped by the elves. In some other cases, you have situations where these things are interpreted as having like fallen from the sky and so forth.
Yeah, a lot of the older sources that I read quoted said that they were dropped from the air.
Hmm. Now, for a couple of related concepts here, in Scotland, there are also tales of fairy riding, by which a livestock's paralysis is explained as being due to exhaustion caused by fairies riding the animals around as mounts all through the night. There's also the use of thunderstones, of which I guess elf shot is kind of a subset, or at least they're very related concepts, in which people have reinterpreted stone axe heads, tools, and also fossils as sacred objects that may have fallen from the sky or experience some other supernatural entry into our world. And we see examples of this in European, Native American, and Asian traditions as well.
Mm-hmm.
I found an interesting quote on this. This is from 1894 in Needfire, published in the Illustrated Archaeologist by archaeologist J. Romilly Allen. Quote, "There is hardly a single prehistoric remain in the country whose name does not show that common people associated with fairies, witches, hags, or the devil. So too with the implements and objects found on ancient sites. The stone celt is looked upon as a thunderbolt, the flint arrow an elf arrow, the spindle wheel a fairy's millstone, the colored glass bead an adder bead." Adder beads, by the way, were thought to have been created by snakes, and they were used in folk medicine as well.
Hmm.
And of course, in general, the idea of invisible missiles sent by a supernatural enemy that causes illness, this is also comparable to other concepts of magic spells and curses that can be found in cultures throughout the world. From, you know, there are examples like the traditions of the skinwalkers among the Navajo, the concept of goo poison in the Han Chinese traditions, and, you know, many such traditions around the world that involve the work of outsiders or secret outsiders that bring about sickness in a given people. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go.
Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together. We'll cry together and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, now I thought it would be a good idea for Elfshot specifically to look at a paper that collected some direct accounts of folk beliefs about Elfshot, especially in Scotland, where a lot of this folklore work was done. And this paper is by Thomas Davidson. It's called Elfshot Cattle. It was published in the journal Antiquity in 1956. Now, I do want to preface in the next episode, I think we're going to talk about a couple of papers that offer some criticism of the subject of Elfshot, maybe questioning some things about this alleged folk belief. But I thought it would be good to first look at some of the more prevailing notions from previous scholarship. Now, this paper by Davidson kicks off offering a number of accounts. The first one is one that was recorded in Scottish Notes and Queries in the first series. And this is rendered with a wonderful bit of transliterated Scottish accent, which I will not attempt to do in my own voice as I read it. But it is quoting a Buchan farmer. This is a region of Scotland, a Buchan farmer in the late autumn of 1884. And his complaint was as follows, quoted in Scottish Notes and Queries. Oh, and there are a couple of terms in here I'll have to come back and define in a minute, probably. But the quote goes like this. I've gotten an ill job this morning in the death of a fine stirk by Elfshot. And the pity is he wasn't fastened to a hare tether, which is a halter made of hair. Fan the weapon would have fallen short of him. And then Davidson writes, when asked whether it might not have been due to quarter ill, he replied, that couldn't be. My neighbor and me open up the beast, and there was a hole through his heart. Mm-hmm. So a couple of things there. He says that this happened to a stirk. A stirk is a yearling bullock or heifer, so think a calf, young cattle. And then there's this reference to quarter ill as the opposite explanation. Quarter ill is a common disease found in livestock, also known as blackleg. It's caused by an infection, often in one of the limbs, by Clostridium bacteria. And I've read in other sources that death can be very rapid after symptoms first present, sometimes just a matter of hours. So you could have a calf fall dead of quarter ill without really much warning at all.
I love the detail about the hole through the heart. This lines up with some other accounts I was looking at where, in which Elfshot is not thought to present a traditional wound. In some cases, there's no wound at all, but other times there is a wound if you know what to look for, if you look closely enough. And of course, this easily falls in with the realities we see mirrored in other supernatural scripts. Like if you, you know, the mark of the witch, well, if you look closely enough and you want to find it enough, you will find the mark of the witch. If you want to find the, you know, the hidden sensor that the aliens put in a person's flesh, well, just keep looking. You'll find something that seems a little odd, and surely that is the mark.
Yeah, there are all kinds of methods to detect the mark. I'll talk about that a bit in a minute. One of them I read about is like the oldest member of the family should wear a blue bonnet, and then the blue bonnet will be rubbed all over the cow, and somehow the rubbing of the flower or the... Actually, I don't know if that refers to a flower or an actual bonnet. It says blue bonnet in the paper, but whichever one it is, you rub that on the cow, and that will reveal where the animal was struck.
Hmm.
But anyway, so to recap this story from 1884, this farmer is saying a healthy young calf drops dead in its first year. Suddenly, no apparent explanation, though again, of course, there are diseases that cause sudden death in bovines. And the farmer and his neighbor confirm the cause of death was elf shot because they did an autopsy and found that even though the animal had no external wounds, there was a hole in the animal's heart. Okay, second account cited by Davidson. This was originally published in Proceedings of the Society of Antiquaries in Scotland, and it goes like this. Davidson writes, quote, "Some years before, in 1867, a Mr. Hugh Morrison saw a cow which was said to have been killed by the fairies. When he pointed out to the farmer that her death had been caused by rolling over, and her long horns penetrating the ground had kept her in a position from which she could not rise, he was told that that was a common way in which cows fall when struck by the..." And then this is something that is spelled like it looks like Saghead Sith, but I believe this is Sage She or Side She, which is Scots Gaelic for fairy arrow.
Hmm.
So Davidson connects these beliefs to, as we already mentioned, the discovery of Neolithic flints in the fields and the countryside, where he claims that these were not generally associated with prehistoric human technology. Now, there are some associations of that kind going all the way back to the 17th century, but they're not generally accepted by the people, Davidson says. And he quotes the story of a Reverend John Fraser, who was writing a letter dated to the year 1702. It was recorded in a work called The Darker Superstitions of Scotland by J.G. Dalyell. And the letter is talking about how Fraser thought it was strange, quote, "that these elf stones, whether little or mickle," mickle meaning large, "little or mickle, has still the same figure, though certainly known to fall from the air. The commonality superstitiously imagines that the fairies hath made and gives them that shape, and that they do hurt by them, which we call elf shot." And then he goes on to quote a wonderful work, the 17th century minister and proto-folklorist Robert Kirk's treatise, The Secret Commonwealth of Elves, Fauns, and Fairies, which is a fantastic historical read if you ever get time to check that out. So Kirk is describing the beliefs of the people of Scotland and talking about the weapons made by elves and fairies. And so to quote here from Davidson, "Similarly, Kirk describes the weapons as being, quote, most what solid earthly bodies, nothing of iron, but much of stone, like to a soft flint spa, shaped like a barbed arrowhead, but flung like a dart with great force. These arms, cut by ert and tools, it seems beyond humane." And I think ert as a noun often means like a compass point, but it could mean like art or guidance.
Hmm.
But again, Kirk is saying that they're beyond human. I think I said humane, but it'd probably just be human here. Have something of the nature of thunderbolt subtlety and mortally wounding the vital parts without breaking the skin. So I love this idea. They have something of the nature of thunderbolt subtlety. This description from the 17th century reminds me of what the farmer in the much later account in the 19th century said about opening up the calf and finding that even though the skin had not been broken, the heart had been pierced with a fairy arrow and they could tell by the hole. Mm. And here Kirk says that these weapons have this thunderbolt subtlety. If I understand that right, I think he's suggesting almost kind of a semi-spectral quality, that like lightning, they can kill you without leaving a hole in the skin, even though they are actual physical missiles. They've got kind of a transparent or subtle quality that allows them to kind of warp through solid matter. And later in the text, Davidson writes that there was a belief in Ireland where you could have an animal that had been hit by an elf arrow, and you would not find a hole in the skin, but if you feel with your fingers, you could find a hole in the flesh beneath, even though, again, the skin is intact. And I love thinking about that because even if you just, you know, feel around on your own body, you can find all kinds of little, like, I don't know, textural differences in the flesh underneath the skin you're pressing on, which you could interpret to be like a hole.
Yeah. There's you can go wild, you know, reinterpreting your own physiology if you think there might be some sort of a hole there made by elves or what have you. So it's fascinating.
Well, and it makes me think about like hypochondria, you know, mm-hmm. in this era. So now you might have a more realistic catalog of diseases to draw upon when you are sort of like getting in your head about that and assuming that you might have all kinds of things affecting you. You can like look up real medical conditions on the internet, but like, you know, at a time before that, instead of hypochondriac Googling the Mayo Clinic website and stuff, the people are thinking about like elf arrows and all kinds of curses and things like that.
Yeah. Did I pull a muscle or do I have elf cake? You know, it's both would seem equally possible in these cases.
I also think there's an interesting tension here that if there was some belief that these weapons were somehow ghostly or subtle in a more archaic sense, like able to pass through solid objects like a ghost, that's an interesting tension with the evidence of them often being literally an artifact made of stone. The stone, the most perfectly solid and earthly substance people can think of.
Yeah, that is interesting. The idea that this is some sort of, at once, it is somehow a magical, invisible weapon that cuts right through flesh and pierces organs and brings about mysterious elf illnesses. And yet at the same time, yeah, here's the stone. You can hold it. You can pick it up. It outlives us all.
One final account I wanted to mention from Davidson, he quotes a testimony allegedly given during trials for witchcraft in Scotland, and this is in a book by Pitcairn. And this is citing the alleged testimony of a woman convicted for witchcraft in 1662 named Isabel Gowdy, who reports having seen the elf arrows being made, quote, "The devil sharps them with his own hand and delivers them to elf boys. What whittles and dights them," I think dights means to like adorn, equip, or ready something, "and dights them with a sharp thing like a packing needle." And a packing needle was a large, heavy needle used for sewing rough materials like canvas. Now, that's an interesting account for a number of ways. One is that, of course, while we should always be skeptical readers of any historical account, remember that there are like several extra layers of skepticism you should apply to alleged confessions of witches, not just because they involve supernatural elements, but because you have to often suspect coercion in the circumstances of the confession and also suspect alterations made by the persons allegedly recording the testimony. But interesting nonetheless that like somebody at least put together this account of, so Satan is making these weapons and then handing them off to elf boys to be refined. And the elf boys will whittle them and then adorn them with like a sharp prick on the end, like a packing needle.
Yeah, I was reading in one of my sources that I was looking at that you see a lot of picking and choosing from both Christian and pre-Christian traditions and working out exactly how elf shot works in this case, but also how one alleviates elf shot. Like, are you calling out to the Holy Ghost, or are you sort of calling out maybe with a little more a little more vaguely to other powers in the world?
I would say this is also evidence of a tradition that you see. I think we talked about this a bit in some episodes we did last year called The Holy Undead, mm-hmm. that involves some stories of stories from the frontiers of Christianity in the medieval period. But the idea would be that sometimes beings that were not necessarily devils or could have multiple moral valences in the original context of a religion, once the area is taken over by a new religion, these beings undergo a kind of formal demonization where now they're just turned in. Well, those were demons, actually. Those are devils.
Now, I'm reminded of an example. This was something from one of our episodes last year that came out during Halloween. Ghosts of Wind and Rain, I believe, was the title. We mentioned Herne the Hunter as being a kind of Wild Hunt related ghost that was said to ride through the woods surrounding Windsor Castle. And there are various stories about him. But I remember one of the details from that, and I won't go through all of it, but there was one account. And this one was actually shared by Carol Rose in one of her books. There was a story told or retold by folklorist Ruth Tongue about three British youths decked out in the Teddy Boy style of the 1960s. And they're out there in the woods near Windsor Castle. They find a horn in the woods. They blow it. And then an unseen spirit pursues them through the woods and shoots one of them with a ghost arrow, slaying them dead without any physical wound. So that, of course, is easily playing with the same palette of colors that we have in Elf Shot. I mean, it is essentially Elf Shot.
So there could be like a hole in the brain without mussing of the pompadour.
Right.
The story is much funnier, by the way, if you know what the Teddy Boy style looks like. So you should look that up if you're not familiar.
I had to look it up again to see what the style consisted of, and it's hard to nail down. It's hard to really, how do I explain this? Weird suits, strange hair, kind of a youth style that did not quite become iconic, at least not to modern minds. Maybe it has more staying power in Britain.
I see some elaborate upswept hairstyles. I guess you would call these pompadours or, I don't know, maybe something else. But then I see very long coats, sometimes skinny ties. I don't know what else to group this with. It's not exactly mod. It's not exactly greaser. It's something else.
Yeah. British subculture of the mid-50s to the mid-60s. I guess the big thing would be like, what are the Teddy Boy movies? I think there was just a movie called Teddy Boys from, what is this, 1959, starring Cliff Richard. But again, I have to hear from perhaps our listeners in the UK who have thoughts on the Teddy Boy style. Teddy Boy or not, you don't want to go messing around in the woods and picking up strange horns and blowing on them, because that's one way to catch a ghost arrow.
Right. And one last thing I do want to say about this paper before we move on for now is that even by Davidson's account, not everybody who found an arrowhead in Great Britain in centuries past thought that they were made by elves, fairies, witches, or the devil. Davidson quotes a Welsh naturalist named Lwyd, I think is how you say his name. It's spelled L-H-W-Y-D. But who this guy, as early as the 17th century, was arguing that these elf arrows were in fact relics of a previous regime of human manufacture. In fact, he was arguing against multiple theories, one that they had been made by supernatural beings, the other that they had just been made as charms. He was like, I don't think they were made as charms. In fact, they look a lot like the arrows that are still used by some people today to hunt food. So, they were probably used for shooting by people who used to live here.
Yeah, but like we said, they do end up getting used as amulets and charms, and also have their place in folk remedies of the day.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
One of the sources I was looking at with a focus on Irish traditions is Flint and Lithic Lore by Marion Dowd from 2019, published in Archaeology Ireland. And Dowd points out that the artifacts in question in Ireland, in this case, and collected by the Irish Folklore Committee in the late 1930s, were primarily collected and originally interpreted in post-medieval and modern Irish rural communities. And the various elf stones or elf shots, they consisted of various things, including post-medieval gun flints, fossils, unusual pebbles, but they also included Neolithic and Bronze Age arrowheads. So I think that's important to keep in mind. Like, basically anything could be an elf stone or an elf arrow if it were found to be novel in some way, and then gets reinterpreted with this supernatural script. Reminds me a bit of I've brought this up numerous times, with the idea of star jelly, the idea that if you see some sort of, it looks like something fell from the sky in the nearby woods. So you go out into the nearby woods and you keep poking around until you find something slimy that you're like, I've never seen that before. This must be the thing that fell from the sky. Right. There are plenty of slimy things in the woods. You just usually aren't looking for them. But if you look for them with the script in mind.
The mucus of the universe.
Yeah. So Dowd also points out some, basically goes over some of the general ideas caught up in the traditions of elf shot. Sometimes the effects were human targeted in order to take the person away to the fairy realm. But it seems like most cases, you're dealing with the targeting of cattle. And in some cases, this might be intentional. Other times, it's described as being due to an accident. Like, basically, there are battles between groups of elves in the night. And, well, your cattle just happened to stray between these two groups, and one of them caught an elf arrow by accident. And then there are other things, of course, one can do to anger the elves in some of these traditions. One of the examples that she specifically mentions is the cutting down of a white thorn tree. That could earn you an elf shot right there. And then she also spends a lot of time talking about the cures for elf shot. And a lot of these do end up involving the little elf stones and elf arrows that one might find, these various stone artifacts that are very often Neolithic or Bronze Age arrowheads. But she mentions other cures that don't involve this. For instance, one was to travel silently and wordlessly to a bog and fetch water for the animal to drink. But you had to keep your silence the whole time or it wouldn't work. She discusses a collection of elf stones known as the Taniwadi Duff Sades. And the collection, she says, consisted of 15 flint and chert lithics, including a Neolithic hollow scraper, two convex scrapers, several complete and broken blades and flakes, waste flakes, and a post-medieval gun flint. And these had apparently also been used in various folk medicine treatments over the years. As she points out later, you would often have in a community, you would have a collection of these. Like these would be the elf stones that were kept. And if there's some sort of suspected case of an animal having been elf shot or experiencing elf bolt, then you would turn to these artifacts and somebody, you know, who knew how to use them.
Mm.
I included a picture here of these particular stones from this paper, Joe, and you can see them here. These have not been, or at least to my eye, they don't seem to have been changed in any way, shape, or form. I know I saw some other images where it looks like in the sort of reinterpretation of the item, there might be something added to them, but these seem very much as they would have been found.
Yeah, I'd seen some mounted in... I don't know what the term is, a little sort of like frame for a stone charm.
Yeah. So how would these be used? Well, we mentioned the water already, and indeed the use of water seems to be a common theme in treatments where you'll have the elf shot will be placed in the water. Other times they'll be wrapped in a rag, and then that bundle of rag and stones will be placed in the water, and then you give the water to the animal to drink. Sometimes the water is heated up. Other times it's not. Sometimes iron is added to the mixture. Sometimes coins. In one case that she cites, the mixer added, quote, a florin, a penny, and a half penny. So a very, very specific amount of money added to the mix.
Who keeps the money afterwards?
I don't know. Like, I don't guess the money is considered as special as the stone. So I guess the money might go back in your pocket.
Mm.
But I could be wrong on that. She also mentions a treatment method by which, quote, a plow coulter was heated in the fire and passed around the cow several times, repeating incantations until the elf dart, quote, melted into the animal's body. And I really love that one, in part because it doesn't seem to involve water or the use of one of these stones. It uses like another sort of magical modern artifact, like magical power is attributed to the plow coulter. And then you're using incantations and making this, like the supernatural dart that is inside the animal melt away and become part of the animal.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, this particularly reminded me a bit of both like psychic surgery and the ufology concept of alien implants. Like, you know, there's something inside you. It's not supposed to be there. Let's use a psychic surgery to remove it. And of course, you know, that'll be a situation where, you know, it's a con act where one is pretending, putting on a show of removing something from the body without actually making an indention in the body.
Right.
Now, what's interesting to think about there, though, is that it, on one hand, dealing with like modern concepts of psychic surgery and ufology, versus these older ideas, when you're dealing with the human context, some sort of ritual like this could have a placebo effect on the human individual. And you could never discount the placebo effect completely. But with the cow, the cow doesn't know what's going on. They don't know. The cow doesn't know why you're heating up a plow coulter and going in circles around it, et cetera.
That's actually a fantastic question that I have never thought to look into before. Could there be a placebo effect on animals? It would probably need to work by a different mechanism because like in humans, it does seem to make a difference if the human thinks there's a mechanism of repair or something, even if there's not. In the case of an animal, though, I could still imagine there could be placebo-like effects, maybe like that an animal feels better by receiving attention from its human, like the same human that feeds it is paying attention to it now, or by, I don't know, other sort of calming effects of certain types of attention or intervention. I don't know.
Or like the licking of a dog licking its wound, that sort of thing. I guess that's a more complicated topic. Like to what extent is the licking actually helping? And then to what extent is it just a calming action on the part of the dog?
Oh, I imagine that dogs licking wounds is to some extent adaptive. I again, I haven't checked this. I would assume that it would be to remove contaminants from wounds.
Now, Dowd shares other healing measures here. This one, I think, was from the modern period. Quote, the fairy shot cow was cured by feeding her gunpowder mixed with an egg.
Mm, my favorite breakfast. Wait a minute. Hold on. No, gunpowder has ingredients that are used in cooking sometimes, right? Like nitrates. Am I wrong about that? Hold on. Okay, I was right about that. So gunpowder is like the main constituent of it is potassium nitrate, also known as saltpeter, and that is also a major ingredient in like cured meats. So I don't know, maybe you're having like a cured egg yolk. I guess I'm reaching here.
I'm going to put on a strong warning against trying this at home, though. Please do not cook with gunpowder. Dowd shares some other fascinating tidbits from these various accounts of elf shot. One is that disrupting a ring fort could earn you potential elf shot. This also gets into the reinterpretation of remains of old civilizations and cultures, because ring forts, certainly in Ireland and outside of Ireland as well, we're talking about the remains of Bronze Age circular fortified settlements.
Mm.
In particular, she mentions one account that was shared of a woman driving cattle past a ring fort, and then suddenly the herd is attacked by a fairy shooting one of these arrows through the air. And the cow is struck and collapses, but then she's able to search around, find various bits of flint fragments, boil these, quote, in the cow's drink, and thereby cured her. And there's some other fun accounts. There's some sort of like near misses that I also thought were very very fun. There's one account in which you have a woman returning home, and she has a wooden pail of milk with her. And when she gets home, she realizes that there are two elf stones embedded in the pail, and these were thrown by the fairies, by the elves. There's another story of a woman carrying a baby. And when she gets home, she finds that the baby has one of the elf stones in its hand and is chewing on it, which I like that one as well. Like, did the baby catch it out of the air, or did the elves like give it to the baby? Like, I kind of like that later interpretation, because it's like, you know, the elves see like, oh, this is a baby. This is really, you know, this isn't like the other humans. Let's give the baby an elf arrow. And also let's kind of just mess with the mom by doing this.
Catching it in the air. Well, that's a nimble baby. That baby's got a future in professional sports.
But anyway, conventional wisdom is that if there is elf shot thrown at you and you happen to find an elf stone on the ground, you better take it as a protective amulet and or to use for its curative effects if you were hit, or if more particularly if a cow in your keeping was hit. And there are sort of common interchangeable features of the cure that Dowd shares. So we've touched on several stories that mention this already. It's placing the stones in water and perhaps adding something like a piece of metal or particular coins to the water as well. Then the water may be consumed by the sick, or in some cases rubbed on like the cow's body. There may be prayers, they may be incantations, and I saw some examples of these that some of them like lean more into Christian traditions and mention the Holy Ghost. Others seem a little more pre-Christian. The water itself that's used may come from a particular place, such as a stream at a crossroads or a particular bog. And then at least in one case, I saw a situation where once you have the water prepared, instead of giving it to the cow, you pour it on the ground near where the elf shot occurred. So treat the place where the wounding occurred to treat the wound. Also, silence during journeys factors into some of these. We already mentioned one account of that. Again, a mixing of pagan and Christian traditions. And these are just some of the basic properties you see in the treatment, though there are, again, a lot of variations here. There's a lot of drift into exactly how one might cure elf shot and exactly how or to what extent or if you might incorporate elf stones in the cure. Now, I didn't look, but I can only imagine that various conspiracy thinkers have a lot of fun with this in terms of like ancient aliens and perhaps ancient time travelers. Like, clearly, they might argue, this is referring to a time when a time traveler went back in time and fired a revolver at somebody, fired a handgun, and there was a shell casing left on the ground. Or an alien used a phaser or something to that effect.
Yeah, I was thinking phasers, because there you could have some kind of, sort of science fantasy explanation of how it zaps the inside without burning the skin.
Yeah, and of course, I love the argument of, well, the elves were actually aliens, because, yes, that is absolutely correct, but not in the way that you're trying, not in the way that you're saying it. Like the idea of the elf, the idea of the alien visitor, like these are the highly related concepts. These are linked concepts that do the same thing, that fulfill the same purpose in our attempt to understand the unknown. That's always amusing.
Yeah, I think it's quite clear that at the very least, in most cases, what you're looking at is extremely similar mental and social phenomena getting a new coat of paint or getting a reskin, basically.
And I certainly don't want to speak ill of the elves. I'll read everybody a quote from the Wikipedia entry on elves. This is one I shared with you just the other day, Joe. Quote, this is from the Wikipedia entry. From a scientific viewpoint, elves are not considered objectively real.
Citation needed. Where has anyone ever proven that elves are not objectively real?
Well, there's a citation on this line, and it is from an article titled "Elves in Anglo-Saxon England: Matters of Belief, Health, Gender, and Identity" by Alaric Hall from 2007.
Oh, I've got a couple of papers by Alaric Hall that I think I'm going to talk about in the next episode.
Okay. Well, it sounds like he'll be a good source, because he does seem to, if the Wikipedia citation here is correct, does seem to side with the argument that elves are not objectively real.
Okay, we got to redo our whole approach to this. Consult only journals that are dedicated to the premise that elves are objectively real.
All right. So we'll be back in the next episode. We have more to say about elf shot and elf disease and so forth. In the meantime, welcome to Halloween season. We hope to have multiple episodes here for you that align with the Halloween season. As usual here on Stuff to Blow Your Mind, we like to really like to lean into this holiday particularly. So stick with us. We have core episodes on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We have listener mail on Mondays. On Wednesday, you'll find a monster fact or artifact episode. And again, during this season, they'll definitely be monstrous and horror themed. And then on Fridays, we do Weird House Cinema. That's our time to set aside most serious concerns and just talk about a weird film. And of course, during the month of October, those weird films are definitely going to be more of the horror variety, I imagine.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to a Cross Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.